5 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Oregon is 12 seed. They're in. They'll play Wisconsin. Washington is a 9 seed. They're in. They'll play Utah State. And, of course, Arizona State is in with an asterisk, but in as an 11 seed playing a play-in game against St. John's. The other play-in game is Belmont versus Temple on Tuesday. ASU will play St. John's in a play-in game on Wednesday night, 6:10. You'll hear it here, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. If they win, they'll then advance to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they'll play Buffalo, the team that Bobby Hurley used to coach before he became the coach of ASU, and the team that, of course, knocked off U of A in the first round a year ago. All sorts of crazy ties with that one.
Yeah, some good storylines. I mean, Oates, the coach there now, was hired by Bobby and took over about a week after Bobby left to come here to ASU. Obviously, Buffalo's win over U of A, and they clobbered U of A last year. They beat the heck out of them. I mean, it's a good team. I mean, it's, you don't know with ASU. I think the thing that we've always said is I just don't know if they could put together a lot, you know, like, can they put together 3 good wins in a row? Could they put together 4 good wins in a row? I mean, it's just, you know, they've been a very inconsistent team, especially when you start to look at, you know, their shooting. I mean, their shooting is very, do they have good players? Yeah, Remy Martin's a good player. Dort's a good player. Cheatham's a good player. They've got, Romello White's a good player. They've got guys that are good. They've got talent on the team, but there are times, like, to me, when they're not shooting the ball well. I think Lawrence is a key. Kamani Lawrence could be a big key for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been there. I've seen him in person. There's a lot of talent on that team. They should be able to get by St. John's because St. John's has no size and one really great point guard, and that's really it.
And they don't run some wacky 2-3 zone that messed with ASU like last year in Syracuse.
No, but they get out in transition.
They love to get out in transition. They like to get out and run.
So if you're missing shots, that's going to lead to easy baskets for them. Chris Mullen's team likes to run. I've watched St. John's enough. You're going to miss shots. They're going to bury you with those. So that's the key for ASU. Make some shots so they can't get into transition game.
Bobby Hurley at his press conference today talked about 2 straight years of being in the tournament and how that raises expectations for the program.
We did something that hadn't been done here in a long time and going back-to-back tournaments. And it's great for your program when you have multiple years in a row, because then, you know, every new group of players that come in, this is what we do here. This is, you know, what we expect to do, and that's what we strive for. And the culture of winning and valuing winning and getting to the tournaments like this. So hopefully that's starting to build and develop in our program.
The problem is, and anybody who's listened to our show in the last month, I think we've been talking about it, knows kind of how we feel about it. This does not feel like in. This counts
but it
as
doesn't,
in.
It doesn't need to feel like in to us. It needs to feel like in to the kids that they're recruiting. Hey, we've been to the NCAA tournament 2 times in a row. Oh, wow, I want to play in the NCAA tournament. Here's the video of Bobby Hurley and the team celebrating the news that they got into the NCAA tournament. So the most important thing, honestly, what Bobby's talking about is exactly right. The perception that ASU is a good basketball program. And a lot of the perception is how many times you could say you've been to the NCAA tournament. We went to the NCAA tournament in 2018, and we're going again in 2019.
And we're doing something that hasn't been done since the early 80s with this program, because you have to go back.
It's selling.
To
it's
80
selling.
And 81 to find the last 2 consecutive years they've made the tournament. No, that's a fantastic point. It doesn't matter what you think, what I think, what the fans think.
What
I know
the recruits think.
I know how the fans reacted to it yesterday, and there seemed to be a real split among the fans. And I don't know whether it was 60-40, 50-50, whatever. But I know some fans were like, hey, in is in. And when you haven't done anything since the early years of the Reagan administration, it counts for something. All right? Back-to-back tournament appearances matters. It's significant. And it means something. Other fans, probably ones who were listening to you and I talk about how in doesn't feel like in when you're playing in a play-in game, kind of were like, all right, hopefully they win on Wednesday so they can actually get into the tournament. Hopefully they can win on Wednesday so they can actually play a game that falls within the boundaries of when we typically associate with March Madness, right? And it's not on a Tuesday game or a Wednesday game. It's Thursday or Friday.
As high profile as he is, James Harden hasn't done anything to help the current Sun Devils. Not helping anybody recruit. Nobody's looking at James Harden saying, oh, that guy went to ASU. I want to go to ASU. James Harden didn't have success in the NCAA tournament. Didn't take anybody to a Sweet 16 or a Final Four or an Elite Eight.
Right.
You know, Ike Diagu, great player, didn't do anything. So a lot of the great players that have played here, and there's been a few, every once in a while they'd get a great player. Those guys were nice to have, and they were good to go watch and play, but they didn't do anything to elevate the program. It's the coach. The coach has to elevate the program. And that's Bobby. Bobby's a big name, and if he's got this team going to a few NCAA tournaments in a row, it'll help.
And I think you would agree that even though we might be a little disappointed by the play-in status for the second straight year, it's pretty much undeniable, at least it is from where I sit, that Bobby Hurley has done exactly that. He has elevated this program to places that it just didn't get
under Herb Senbach.
Under Herb or Coach Evans, or you could even argue Coach Frieder, right? I mean, you have to go back to the Ned Wolk era to find the last time a coach did what Bobby Hurley did.
Sendick went to two NCAA tournaments. And he was here 9 years. 9 years. And he went to two tournaments in the NCAA.
Yep. Evans, I think, went to one tournament, I think. I don't know how many Bill Frieder did, but it wasn't a lot. I'm looking right now.
I'm just letting you know, Herb, 8-22. Herb had some decency, but he was always 16 losses, 12 losses, 13 losses, 21 losses, 19 losses. It's just,
you know how many times Frieder got him there? Twice.
I was going to say twice.
91 and 95. That was it. So Bobby Hurley, in half the time.
Mario Bennett, mm-hmm. right? Then you have Mario Bennett, Frieder.
In half the time, Bobby Hurley has already matched Bill Frieder, has already matched Herb Sendek, probably has already passed Rob Evans. I think Evans just did it once. I think it was just the Ike Diagu year for Evans. I think that's it. I mean that part, yeah, we can sit here and just the one time? Yeah, just the one time for Rob Evans. So
he's already been there twice.
Yeah.
He's
already elevated the program.
In less time.
And as long as he stays, and I have no reason to think that he won't, as long as he stays, I think Bobby Hurley will get to the point where you're not in these play-in games anymore, that ASU can get in next year as a solid 8 seed, and then maybe the year after that as a solid 6 or a solid 5. He's building. It's growing. It's coming.
Well,
happening.
They had 3 guards last year that all went to go play overseas in Europe, and he lost all 3 of those guys. I mean, Remy Martin was a freshman on last year's team. He didn't start games. He played off the bench. But you look at those guys that he had last year, like Trey Holder and Shannon Evans and Cody Justice. They were good players. He lost all 3 of them, and they're back in the NCAA tournament. So with all the losses that they had, 3 really good basketball players, 3 really good basketball players, they're able to get back in the NCAA tournament. That's a good testament right there to what Bobby's doing.
No doubt about it. It just feels, to me, and I think you agree, a little empty because I didn't want play-in games.
Yeah, because we're at Marley's on Friday. We're at Marley's in Chandler.
Yeah.
Okay, and that game on Friday against Buffalo is like a 1 o'clock game.
Yes.
Like it's a 1 o'clock game.
If they beat St. John's on Wednesday, it's
so
like a 1 o'clock game.
So if we're at Marley's on Friday and ASU's playing Buffalo on Friday, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great, you're going to want to get your table early. It'll be a lot of fun.
March Madness, speaking of that, tips off on Thursday. With it comes your chance to be the Arizona Sports Bracket Boss. It's presented by Santan Ford and Schwartz Laser Eye Center. Text the word BOSS to 62620. Sign up, get your bracket, compete for your shot at $1,500. Again, text BOSS to 620-620. The trade rumors continue to swirl all around Josh Rosen and the Cardinals. If he is actually, in fact, on the trade block, what team is the best fit? A team maybe you haven't thought about. We'll bring up next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
You must learn.
It's the Knowledge Drop.
Let knowledge drop.
The Knowledge Drop. Brought to you by Lifetime Windows. Did you know metal window frames conduct heat right into your home? Visit LifetimeWindowsAZ.com.
8 straight years, a first 4 team has won at least one more game in the NCAA tournament. In 7 of the last 8 years, it has been the team that plays in Wednesday's play-in game. Not the Wednesday game between the 16 seeds.
That's got to be a coincidence. I mean, that's got to be just
there's no other way to explain it.
I don't know if there's any advantage playing a day later.
No, but it is interesting. I don't think it's a coincidence that a first four team has gone on to win another game. I mean, it suggests that those teams are worthy of inclusion in this tournament, right?
Yes.
That they belong. I don't know what the rhyme or reason of it, why it doesn't happen on Tuesdays and it always seems to happen on Wednesdays, but every single year since the first four has been around, a first four team has won at least one more game in the tournament, and maybe ASU is that team.
Yeah, because obviously Syracuse, you want to prove that you do belong in the tournament. You want to prove that, hey, everybody doubted us, we were on the bubble. You want to prove that we belong there. There's also teams that get in and get slaughtered by 30, and then you're like, I wonder if that team should have been in there. Most people thought they got it right. There wasn't as much debate on the, there's more debatings on like seedings, like, you know, should Michigan State have been seeded a little bit higher?
Yeah.
And there was more debates on that than there were about who got in. You know, like,
that
should
was
NC State have gotten in? I mean, that was one of them. But for the most part, I think that they felt Dick Vitale had heard him on, and he was just, he doesn't like the power conferences as much as the mid-majors. He wants more mid-majors to get in there. And they said, look, there's plenty of opportunities for mid-majors to get in. It's not like they don't have many opportunities.
Yeah.
They got plenty of chances.
I wouldn't know. I automatically turn the TV down when Dick's on. I swear I do.
Do you really?
I automatically reach for the volume and just turn it down, and then when he's back off, I go turn it back up. I swear it's like this instinctual thing I have when I see him. Like, I don't need to hear. I don't need to hear Dickie B today. I'm good. I'd rather hear Billis and Greenberg and Williams and Reese Davis. I don't. I'm good with that Dick Vitale. I'm okay. I hate to say it, but I. It's just instinctual. It's like Charlie Casserly on the NFL Network. I see him and I'm just going, I'll just turn that down right now.
We're talking rigatoni, marinara, the emotion, the passion.
He's lost a lot off his fastball.
Yes, he has.
He doesn't have the same passion. He doesn't get excited as much. They bring him on. You get a little analysis from him and then you're done.
Yeah, well, Dick Vitale, you used to get a lot more analysis in addition to the bluster. Now I just don't feel like there's much meat on the bone, right?
That's the thing. The energy is still fully there, but what is he even saying?
Him a cop-out or anything, but I'm in my early to mid-30s. I've known him my entire life, broadcasting college basketball.
Oh, sure.
He's been doing it forever.
I'm in my late 40s. I can't remember a time when Dick Vitale wasn't the premier college basketball announcer. I really can't remember a time.
Just when was the last time you heard him talk and you said, I learned something today?
Yeah, good point by Dick Vitale.
You just liked his passion. You liked his energy. You loved his appreciation. He loved the game. You could tell how much he loved about the game.
No doubt about that,
So that was always it with him. You got with all these guys, you get a little bit of insight. Hey, you're watching these shows, right? Everybody's going to fill out a bracket. You're watching these shows. Okay, what does he think? Oh, okay. And then what you do is you go through like four or five or six people's bracket and they all got different things. You're like, okay, I really like what he said about that upset. And then somebody said, there's no chance that's going to happen. So, you know what I'm saying?
You almost have to pick one expert and just kind of go with that guy, right? Well, this guy said this, so I'm going to go with that. Or you just do
gut
reaction and just do it. Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network wrote a piece today for NFL.com. Quarterback team fits after the first wave of 2019 free agency. So what he's basically looking at, okay, free agency's basically done for the most part. Things have kind of settled in. What does it mean for the draft, and how does it impact the draft? He took all the top quarterbacks available in the draft, and he matched them with their best team, but with a little bit of a caveat now.
Yeah, he added a player.
He added Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
He added Josh Rosen with the idea that Rosen could be on the market in the next month and a half. He thinks the best fit for Josh Rosen would be the New England Patriots. Quote, in my opinion, Rosen is worth the Patriots' first-round pick, 32nd overall. I would trade it for him in a heartbeat. They have 12 picks, most in the draft. Belichick, you know he's going to move all up and down the board every single round with all that inventory. Jeremiah believes they could sacrifice the 32nd pick in the draft. So the Cardinals would then have back-to-back picks, 32, and then the first one to start the second round. He thinks he would sacrifice that in a New York minute to get Josh Rosen on the New England Patriots.
Maybe to sit behind Tom Brady for how many years? He's on a rookie contract. So if you're not going to play him for 2 years or 3 years, is it really worth, trading? Now, you may like value. You might like the value. That kid was a top 10 pick, and I'm getting him for the 32nd pick. We've gotten rid of Brissett. We've gotten rid of Garoppolo. you know, if you don't know when Brady's going to retire, it's tough. It's tough to, but you might want to have a successor in place that's a high-end quarterback rather than somebody you drafted in the fifth round. Well, considering they drafted Brady, Brady got drafted in the sixth round. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, with Rosen, there is value. You get a top 10 guy for the 32nd pick if you were, you were to make that trade. The only thing that I think about with all of these teams, the Giants included with Eli, is are you really going to trade for Josh Rosen, who started 13 games last year, and have him sit for a year or two?
Right. It's a tricky question.
Like, are you really going to have him just, hey, listen, I know you're, because now you're wasting the second year of his rookie contract without seeing him.
Right.
You know the first year you can't gauge. Can't gauge the first year, throw it out the window. Second year, well, you're not going to play. Third year, I mean, if Brady comes back, if Brady plays two more, that's 3 years where you've got nothing really to gauge Rosen on. And then if Brady retires, you're basically going to have 1 year to make up your mind on what you have in Josh Rosen.
It does complicate the equation. There's no doubt about it. All I can think is, and I obviously don't know the answer to this, how did Bill Belichick evaluate Josh Rosen a year ago? If Bill Belichick thought in his evaluations, Josh Rosen is the best quarterback available in the 2018 draft, and if he looks at the quarterbacks in this year's draft and says Josh Rosen is the best quarterback in the 2019 draft, then you better believe Bill Belichick is going to sacrifice the 32nd pick overall in the draft for Josh Rosen. If his evaluations on Rosen were that high, if he believes that he's the best quarterback available in the draft the last 2 years combined, I think he would be willing to take that chance and give up a draft pick for a guy, even though he might not play for another year or two.
Wasn't his hand forced on Garoppolo? Didn't he want to keep Garoppolo?
As the story goes,
right?
Yes.
So I think his hand was forced on Garoppolo. He may not have that because of the situation that Robert Kraft is in with the massage parlor in Florida. He may not. He might have a little bit more power in that organization now because the owner's going through. The owner could get suspended from the league. I mean, so he may have a little bit more say in what goes on, even though he's had a lot of say.
Yeah, he's had a bunch.
I think he got overruled on the Garoppolo thing.
Oh,
I think he got overruled on that.
I don't think there's it, but I think when it relates to Tom Brady, no matter how much power Belichick has in the organization, he will get overruled by the owner of that team because I think the owner of the Patriots will keep Brady as the quarterback for as long as Brady wants to be the quarterback of that team. That is totally up to Tom Brady.
I agree.
And I don't think Belichick has one iota of saying that, whether he loves Josh Rosen or hates him. I don't think he's got one bit of say in Tom Brady's
future. I've always said I think those two are just trying to outlast each other. Neither one of them wants to retire and then let the other one go have success without them.
Yeah. For what it's worth, Daniel Jeremiah also, Kyler Murray, best fit, Arizona Cardinals. Said he wrote that he still thinks that Rosen has better long-term upside than Murray, but that he understands it might be a perfect fit between Murray and Kingsbury. But he did write, quote, long-term, I'd prefer to build around Rosen because I expect he'll be the better NFL quarterback once he gets a better offensive line around him.
Is there anybody that doesn't think that Kyler Murray is a perfect fit for the Cardinals that does this?
No.
For a living?
I sent you a link.
I want to find the guy that doesn't think it.
The mock draft tracker that we have up at ArizonaSports.com. I mean, it's almost all overwhelmingly Murray now. Almost every single mock drafter that I've seen that we've got on that tracker in the last couple of days has Murray. He's got Dwayne Haskins to the Giants. He's got Drew Locke to the Washington Redskins. He's got Daniel Jones to the Chargers. And he's got Ryan Finley to the Miami Dolphins. Just in this year's draft class. A couple other guys that he mentioned as well, but those are the biggies right there.
It'll be, listen, we are at March, what's today's date? The
18th. Yes.
No indication right now.
None.
What the Cardinals are going to do. Just a lot of speculation by people that think that Murray's a great fit, and that's it.
It happens every March. Which team is going to be the Cinderella this year in the NCAA tournament? Who is this year's Loyola of Chicago? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Virginia, Duke, North Carolina, Gonzaga. Those are your number ones. Number twos are Michigan State, Michigan, Kentucky, and Tennessee. The only real debate seems to be how Michigan State got stuck in the same bracket, same region as Duke. I know a lot of people were kind of bothered by that.
That was one of the big debates. It wasn't so much on what teams didn't get in. Because adding those other four teams, you know, I think really has taken a lot of that out of it. I think by adding the play-in games and going from 64 to 68, by adding four more teams, we've got less of the you know, teams that they had their bubble burst or teams that, you know, that got jobbed and didn't get in. I was thinking it could have been ASU yesterday as they were going through the bracket, but it wasn't.
Duke is an overwhelming favorite to win this year's tournament, the most overwhelming favorite by the Vegas odds since Kentucky a few years ago. Now, Kentucky didn't win a championship when they were the overwhelming favorite back in 2015, but Duke is the heavy favorite in Vegas right now to win this year's
tournament.
Yeah,
because, I mean, you look at their path, second round, you're probably talking about maybe UCF, Sweet 16, Virginia Tech. Now, Virginia Tech beat them in February, so they do have a win against them, but it would be a team, you know, but a team that they're somewhat familiar with, and they played in Virginia Tech. And then when you get to the region, so once they get to that Sweet 16, you know, they're probably going to be able to, I don't know if I would coast through it, but they're going to be able to get at least to the Final Four, I would think, from there. I'm just looking at their bracket and how they would get there. The path isn't that bad for Duke either. That's what I'm saying. Their path is actually pretty easy to get deep into this tournament.
The ESPN guys, Jay Billis, says, look, the thing about Duke is their players have really no tournament history.
I think it's random as far as, you know, like, how do you say, well, Duke's going to do really well this year because the team 2 years ago lost to Lehigh or something like that. Yeah. Totally different guys. So I think this team is a totally different entity. I mean, none of these guys were around. They don't have a history. Everything's new. This is the first time they've done any of this stuff. So they have no sort of institutional memory, I guess, in that regard. So I'm not worried about that stuff. This is a totally different animal, and maybe the fact that they don't have any experience isn't hurtful. Maybe it helps them. I don't know.
Jay Williams, same show, although he was on today, says, I think this tournament is going to be a lot of chalk.
I think before, when I had too much time, then I become like a mad scientist, right? I start breaking down coaches and schemes and, you know, locations and everything instead of just going with my gut reaction. So, look, I'm sure a lot of them could be wrong. I think there could be a lot of chaos in the opening rounds, but I think if the one or two doesn't win it, I will be shocked. I mean, I got ones and twos in the Final Four. I got Duke, Gonzaga, Tennessee, and Kentucky.
So Michigan State. So let's look at this again. I was looking at the path for Duke. So they would match up if Michigan State takes care of business in the Elite Eight. Now Michigan State's probably they're a good two seed. But I love the kid. I've talked about this Winston kid, the point guard, because everybody's talking about Ja Morant. But this Winston kid is really good, and he could be a player that the Suns look at in the draft. So they've got a great backcourt. So that would be the one challenge for them in getting to the Final Four would be that matchup, a 1-2 matchup against Michigan State. Unless because Michigan State won the Big Ten title. They won the Big Ten tournament title. They've got a great backcourt. They have to play a really good game to beat Duke, but that's one team that you would go in thinking they've got a puncher's chance. They've got, like, nobody else. I don't think Virginia Tech would have a chance to beat them. UCF, no. I think VCU, no. I think the best, obviously, it would be the Elite Eight matchup is the only one you could look at and say they potentially could lose that game.
Yeah. Virginia, the first ever number one seed to lose to a 16. That happened last year when they played University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and UMBC beat them by 20 in that, you know, just a historical moment in terms of this tournament. It's interesting. I found this an interesting trend when it comes to finding a Cinderella in this year's tournament. Each of the last 5 years, the Final Four team to come from Virginia's region has been seeded seventh or worse. Okay? You see what I'm saying?
Yes. There's always been the big upsets.
So whatever region Virginia is in,
there's been major upsets.
Each of the last 5 years, the Final Four team to come out of that bracket has been seeded seventh or worse. In four of those 5 years, Virginia was a one or a two. So when you see Virginia as the number one seed in the South, right? And I tell you,
there's nobody in this bracket. They got the best bracket.
Cincinnati is a seven.
Watched them in the championship game yesterday.
Old Miss is an eight. Oklahoma is a nine. Iowa, I think it's Iowa, 10. Oregon at 12.
No way. I'll bet you right now they make it out to at least the Elite Eight.
At least the Elite Eight.
Yeah, because if you look at it, second round, probably play Ole Miss. No way they lose that one. Sweet 16, Tennessee. No, wouldn't be Tennessee.
Tennessee wouldn't be till the end. Sweet 16 would be Wisconsin or K-State if you go chalk. Yeah.
So Virginia, Yes. Yeah, I would say that that like Virginia, maybe Virginia versus Tennessee in the Elite Eight, and then Tennessee would have a shot. But I think all the other games, I think Virginia's in a pretty good spot. Virginia versus Ole Miss.
Here's the history.
And Virginia versus K-State, they're going to win those games. They should win those games.
Here's the history, and it's stunning. So 2018, they were a one seed. Virginia lost in the first round. Loyola of Chicago was an 11, made it to the Final Four. 2017, they were a five seed. South Carolina made it to the Final. Throw that one out. 2016, they were a one seed. They made it all the way to the Elite Eight, but Syracuse went to the Final Four as a 10. 2015, they were a two seed. They got bounced in the second round, and Michigan State as a 7 went to the Final Four. And then in 2014, they were a one seed. They got bounced in the Sweet 16. Connecticut, a 7 seed, made it all the way to the Final Four. So typically in Virginia's region,
there's been a lot of chaos.
All
right, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm putting Virginia in the Final Four. I'm looking at their bracket. I'm looking at their region. Right. It's terrible.
All right.
Tennessee, Purdue, Oregon, Oklahoma. Like, I think that they got the easiest region, the South.
Vinny Murata was talking today on Bickley and Murata that he's picking Tennessee to potentially win the whole thing.
I am not going to predict Virginia to go very far. I just do not trust them. I do not believe in them.
Okay.
This time of year, I'm not going to bet you a lunch on it or anything.
Believe in Virginia this year.
I cannot trust that team and that coach this time of year. I can't do it. Been burned way too many times. Here's something else that's interesting. And again, I was chewing around the internet all morning finding out stuff about this for people who are filling out their brackets. 11 is the new 12. In March Madness.
11 upsets?
And here's... No. 11 seeds.
Yeah, the 11 seeds are pulling the upsets.
At least one number 11 seed has reached the Sweet 16 five straight years. In comparison, zero number 12 seeds have made the Sweet 16 in the same time span.
Okay, but the 12s always get an upset. 75% of the time.
The 12s always get an upset.
You'll get at least one 12-5 upset.
Five straight years, and 11 has made the Sweet 16. So it's either, ASU, St. John's, Belmont, Temple, St. Mary's, or Ohio State. If history holds, one of those teams is a Sweet 16 team. One of those six teams.
St. Mary's did beat Gonzaga.
Is a Sweet 16 team. That probably, they have to beat Villanova and Purdue to do it.
I don't think that region's that good.
That South region is a mess.
I don't think Purdue's that good this year.
Yeah.
I'm going Virginia in the Final Four.
Also, while we're talking about it, and if you're looking for hints on your bracket, Yahoo Sports, 5 Cinderellas in the tournament. They've got Yale as a 14 seed over LSU.
Okay, good reason why,
because
right?
of all the chaos with LSU and their head coach
on tape.
Belmont to not only beat Temple in the first four, but then to beat Maryland in the next round.
Okay.
New Mexico State as a 12-5 over Auburn.
The team that took out GCU.
UC Irvine as a 13, beating the 4-seeded K-State Wildcats.
Wow.
And Murray State, you mentioned it a second ago, beating the 5-seed Marquette. Ja Morant versus Marcus Howard, the two leading scorers.
Two great players.
In the best opening round game by far. Murray State versus Marquette is much because of those two guys just alone. Just to watch those two
guys play.
If
you're a Suns fan, too.
Sure.
I mean, a chance to see Ja Morant play, that's one of the things you're going to look at because they could end up drafting him.
Join us Wednesday from the AT&T store, Tempe Marketplace. We support Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation's matching veterans with pets. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for complete details. There are some that don't even consider ASU to be in the big dance yet, but if they win on Wednesday, how far can they go? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. So ASU St. John's on Wednesday night, and if ASU wins, then they'll take on Buffalo Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock. We will have both of those games here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, depending on how it all shakes out. And for what it's worth, and I know this is heavy analytics, this is, a computer simulation running through games, umpteen million times to try to figure out what's going to happen. But I will say this, on ESPN's story about potential upsets using its basketball power index, it did in the West region, it didn't list it as one of the best bets, but it did list it under the category of worth a long look. They say that ASU beating Buffalo is worth a long look if you're looking for an upset. 26% chance they say that ASU could beat Buffalo.
Incredible for a team that was one of the final four teams in and barely made it, and now they got them beating the sixth seed. I wonder if that's... Listen,
Jordan just said in my headphones it means ASU's going to lose to St. John's by 20.
Right. I mean, they could.
They're very capable.
There's no
of that.
Sure things in this tournament. I mean, anybody in the world think that Buffalo was going to beat Arizona last year? Come on, nobody thought that.
No, but the one thing I do like, and I think I read it on AZ Central's website today, the number that kind of backs up at least ASU to win on win. Okay, first of all, as you've said, St. John's isn't very good. ASU this year is 8-1 after a loss. All right, so they are good. They have been good at finding ways to put moments like Friday night behind them, right?
Right.
When they lose to a Washington State, they beat Washington. When they lose to a Utah, they beat Colorado. Yeah, they've been very good about that this year, about finding that opportunity to put it behind them. And for as inconsistent as ASU is, and you know this better than anybody because I know you're a St. John's fan, that basketball team's... They've got one really good player, all right? They've got other good players, but one guy that if you can shut him down and if you can frustrate St. John's on the boards, because ASU is just so much bigger a basketball team, I think you can win that game fairly comfortably and at least move on to Friday. I think. I don't think St. John's is that good.
No, but I'm sure St. John's is looking at it the same way. I'm sure St. John's is looking at it like they're not that good. Like,
I'm sure they
Arizona
are.
Arizona State's not that good.
But at least with St. John's.
I mean, that team barely got in.
I mean, they started 12-0, and they were a sub-500 team the rest of the way after that start. I mean, in a conference where, I mean, for goodness sakes, DePaul swept them. Now, I know they swept Marquette, and that's kind of a big deal. But I don't know. I think the chances for ASU to advance to play a Sunday game are actually pretty decent. And maybe I felt that way last year, but I don't think I felt as strong about it. I feel better about this year's team than I did last year. Because I think this year's team...
Last year's team was a better team.
You think so?
Well, I mean, you didn't have Dort, but I mean, you had Cody Justice and you had Trey Evans. I mean, and Evans, you had three really good guards. You didn't have Dort. Remy Martin was a bit player on that team. Oh, they're probably a little bit more balanced this year. I think last year they probably relied more on their guard play.
Oh, they definitely. This year
they're more balanced. I would agree with that.
I think last year's team was harder to judge because they were just so streaky. And that was in part because of the three guards that you just mentioned, right? And how they were just so... If those three guys weren't hitting their shots, if two of those three guys weren't hitting their shots, then we're going to win. Whereas this year's team, I think there is that... I think this year's team has other... more consistent ways to win than last year's team did. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Last year, they had to make their threes. If they didn't, they were going to lose. And it was that simple.
Right.
This year, even on nights where they haven't shot well, they've been able to win basketball games because they defend like crazy. They rebound like crazy. I think this team has a little bit better chemistry than last year's team did. I don't know. I have felt like consistently from beginning to end, this year's ASU team is just a little bit better than last year's team. And Syracuse last year in that playing game, Syracuse has that funky 2-3 zone.
Sure.
That it just messes with you if you don't see it. And it messed with them. It messed with them last year. It messed with TCU when Syracuse beat them in the next round.
That was a close game last year.
They
lost by 4 points,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but wasn't, if memory serves correct, it was a terrible game to watch.
Yes.
It was awful. Nobody could hit anything. And ASU was just trying to shoot over the top of that zone, and they couldn't hit a thing. Couldn't hit a thing.
So if they win the game against St. John's, they would play Friday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
I mean, that would be get to Friday, and if you beat Buffalo, you know, you get to, you play on Sunday.
I haven't even seen who would be next.
You'd play on Sunday.
They would be, I know we shouldn't be looking ahead like this, but. We're going to do it.
Yeah,
anyway.
Why not?
I know. Why not, right? They would play one of these teams. They would play, hold on, let me make sure I'm doing this right. They would play Nevada, Florida, Michigan, or Montana.
Nevada, Florida, Michigan, or Montana?
No, I'm sorry. No. I apologize. They would play Texas Tech or Northern Kentucky. I'm sorry, my eyes are getting... They would play Texas Tech, the winner of the Texas Tech-Northern Kentucky game.
Okay.
So probably Tech as the 3 seed.
Right.
Probably is who they would play if they were able to beat Buffalo. If. But at this point,
You think maybe some of the burden is lifted because now that they're in? I mean, they were in a fight for their lives every game for the last 2 weeks. Ever since they lost to Washington State, and everybody said they're clearly on a bubble. They have to win all of their games down the stretch, or 5 out of 6. You know, maybe they can play loose now because it's not do or die. Every game was do or die, and they did well in the do or die situation.
But it is do or die. I mean, it's a literal interpretation of do or die.
You got in. You got into the NCAA tournament. Now this is all gravy. Go win some games. Maybe they can put it all together.
Maybe. You know what? I kind of, the same argument, but a different way of looking at it. I've liked the way ASU has played ever since it's been do or die. They've played desperate. They've played desperate since they lost to Washington State.
They won 6 out of 7 games before they lost their last game to Oregon. 6 out of 7.
Take that same desperation into the game Wednesday night against St. John's because because now it is literally do or you're done. Do or you are
even
going
Oregon,
home.
Even Oregon, who clobbered Washington, that was an overtime game.
Now, maybe they let up against Oregon because they felt like they didn't need to beat Oregon, that they knew that was good enough. I still think if they had beaten Oregon, we're not even talking about this first 4 game. I think they're all the way in if they beat Oregon.
Again, I said this. It's amazing to me how many games they had to win down the stretch just to stay on the damn bubble.
Yep.
Just to stay on it. They were literally on that bubble for the last 3 weeks, ever since they lost to Washington State. The Washington State loss put them on the bubble, and then somebody was waiting to push them off of it. And all they had to do was like lose one stupid game, and they were done. They were gone. But they did. They took care of business. They won 6 out of 7 down the stretch before they lost to Oregon.
And in many regards, they're in the exact same spot going into this game on Wednesday. I hope they play that game with the same desperation they've played for the better part of the last 3 weeks because that has served them very well. It has served them very well. They have played with a sense
of... They got a good matchup. They're playing a team with no size. No, St. John's has no size. And they have a great point guard.
All right, so we're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Thanks for hanging out with us on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a good night, everyone.